This is ReachMD XM233, the channel for medical professionals. According to the American Lung Association, 22% of high school students are smokers and 8% of middle school students are smokers. Approximately 90% of smokers begin lighting up before age 21, usually in their teens. But tobacco companies say they no longer target teens in their advertising. And in fact, the largest tobacco company, Philip Morris, claims to encourage teens not to smoke by investing about $100 million a year in smoking prevention programs. On the other hand, only a few years ago, total advertising and promotion by five major tobacco companies was $15.5 billion, the highest ever recorded. Health professionals are paying attention to how those dollars are being spent and who is being influenced by tobacco advertising today. Welcome to the Clinician's Roundtable on ReachMD XM Channel 233. I'm Dr. Kathleen Margolin, and joining me from Atlanta, Georgia, is my guest, Dr. Karen Glantz. Dr. Glantz is director of the Emory Prevention Research Center, professor of behavioral sciences and health education at the Rollins School of Public Health, and Georgia Cancer Coalition Distinguished Research Scholar. She has contributed to more than 250 journal articles and book chapters. Welcome, Dr. Glantz.
Thank you, Kathleen.
So, Dr. Glantz, as I mentioned in our introduction, tobacco companies say they are not advertising to teens, but they are also spending more money than ever on advertising to adults. Will this advertising reach teens?
Of course it will. You know, they say that the thing that you do to get teenagers to want something the most is to tell them that it's an adult thing. And so although some of the advertising has been diverted to different media because of the restrictions on the types of advertising and some of the strategies, the advertising will still reach teens. And in particular, the advertising that occurs inside stores that sell tobacco products is going to be in the face of teenagers and anyone else who walks into the stores.
Right. You mentioned some of the restrictions in the late 90s. Billboard advertising of tobacco was banned. Where did tobacco companies turn to invest those advertising dollars?
In the late 90s, they began turning to kind of promotional products like hats, T-shirts, you know, kind of giveaway products. But then the restrictions came in that stopped that from happening. And then they began to turn more directly to the stores that sell, as far as advertising, posters, promotional displays, coupons, and so forth.
It makes obvious sense on the part of cigarette manufacturers to try to get teenagers interested in smoking because it's rare for adults to take up the habit. In what ways are teens being targeted in those stores?
The slant of some of the promotional materials actually, you know, encourages teens to consider them. And just in the general way of making smoking looking attractive, fun, hip, and so forth, those are some of the kinds of promotional appeals that tobacco companies have used.
Talk to us about the role race plays in how cigarette makers are marketing their products.
Race is a very interesting element in the overall tobacco promotion field because different racial images and kind of racial and cultural kind of habits have been identified by the tobacco companies. Over the years, they've attempted to create specific types of cigarette brands within their companies that might appeal to, say, you know, the hip-hop culture of the African Americans or the Latino culture, American Indian, Native American type of culture.
I'm curious, what were those brands? What were they called?
The Native American one, I think, was called Dakota. Oh, and I can't remember. There was an African American brand that actually was test marketed in Philadelphia. Can't remember the name of it, but actually that was a fascinating story because what happened was that the African American community leadership, including a lot of the ministers as well as health leaders, got together and protested. And they essentially shut that brand down.
Yeah, so they're looking for who they can target, who they can safely go after.
Yes.
A few years ago, there was an increase in smoking among teenage girls. Does that trend continue today?
I haven't seen the statistics for the last year or two, but I believe it was somewhat leveling off. But the trajectory among teenage girls has been on the increase while it's been slightly decreasing among boys more so, and that's really an unfortunate trend because lung cancer in women is also on the rise as associated with smoking.
And I read that it's more difficult for women to quit smoking on the Lung Association's website, but they don't know why.
There's a lot of research that's still going on to try to better understand kind of the mix of biological, genetic, psychological factors that may contribute to that. One of the, you know, kind of commonly recognized factors is the concern about weight gain with quitting smoking that comes up for a lot of females. So that's at least part of the mix.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to ReachMD XM233, the channel for medical professionals. I'm Dr. Kathleen Margolin, and my guest is Dr. Karen Glantz, director of the Emory Prevention Research Center and author of hundreds of published journal articles on public health. Dr. Glantz, one of your studies published in the Journal of Health Communication looked at tobacco advertising and promotion in stores. For one thing, you found more than 3,000 ads and promotions in just 184 stores. Describe what else you found.
One of our main findings was that the most heavily advertised brand of cigarette was Kool. That was particularly interesting because Kool is generally not the brand of choice for teenage smokers, but it is the most heavily smoked brand in Hawaii, which is where we conducted our study. Part of the impression that we have is that tobacco companies think that Asian American populations may prefer mentholated cigarettes, such as Kool. But what you can't miss is that the most heavily advertised brand is the most heavily smoked brand.
Right. Does it make a difference that a cigarette is mentholated in terms of encouraging initiation of smoking as a habit?
Not necessarily on a wide scale, but some people find it less distasteful, I guess, to smoke a mentholated brand. But it's really a matter of taste. I mean, one of the things that the tobacco companies have learned over the years is that they need to give a lot of people different choices. In some cases, it's taste. In some cases, it's the intensity of the nicotine rush and so forth. So having different choices makes a difference. It's where they target their advertising, though, that may really have an influence on sales.
Mm-hmm. And looking at these stores where they have so many ads jam-packed within the stores, how do they do it? Where do they put the ads?
The ads are both inside and outside the store. They are on the windows. They're at the cash registers. They're on the displays where cigarettes are located. And then there are also kind of special displays that the manufacturers put into the stores, and they often actually pay the stores to put those up.
And they're paying, looking for specific placement. There are better places. Some places are better than others in stores to place your product or your ad.
Yes, things that are near the end of an aisle or near the cash register, those are some of the more desirable places. Nobody wants to have their ad kind of stuck in the back or in the middle of an aisle that most people won't be going down.
Do they purposely link where their ads are to where middle school-aged children or teens might be looking?
In that case, you'd mostly be talking about stores and advertisements that are located near schools. And particular middle and high school students are often allowed to go off campus, and they often use the stores in the neighborhoods. Now, a lot of states have regulations saying that it's illegal to post these signs within X distance from a school. What we found in our study was that those laws, although they did exist in Hawaii at the time, were not really being enforced, and that indeed we did find 59 stores that had signage on outside their stores that were within 1,000 feet of a playground.
One would think that the increase in the price of cigarettes and restrictions across the country banning smoking in public places, those things must be helping.
They've made an enormous impact. Smoking among adults is less than half of what it was 25 years ago. So they've made an enormous impact. But where we are now is that a lot of the people that are still smoking are heavy smokers, they're addicted smokers, and they have a really hard time quitting. So even with all the restrictions around them, that's going to be much harder to get much lower than where things are now.
Right. So where will be the great effort on the part of those who want to help people not start the habit in the first place?
I think a lot of that habit still will be in schools, but also in the homes. I think as fewer kids grow up in homes where their parents are smoking, they'll be less likely to smoke. I also think that enforcement of laws prohibiting the sales of tobacco to minors can make a difference. There are laws in every state in the United States, but the enforcement of them is pretty variable.
Right. So it's going to be a combined effort on the part of parents and law enforcement as well as healthcare professionals.
Yes, definitely. I think it really is going to take a lot of different directions to be working together to improve the situation further.
Thank you for listening to the Clinicians Roundtable on ReachMD XM233, the channel for medical professionals. I'm Dr. Kathleen Margolin, and my guest has been Dr. Karen Glantz of Emory University. Thank you, Dr. Glantz.
Thank you, Kathleen.
For comments and questions, send your email to xm@reachmd.com. Thank you for listening.